Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about the Kingdom of God, as usual. And we've been talking about Messianic Judaism for a start this morning, and branched off into the Saul Syndrome. And I thought I was the one who invented that phrase, the Saul Syndrome, but actually there are other people using it. Maybe I did invent it, and they're already writing about it. We've been on the radio for years now and numerous different stations. We've been on a little bit of TV. CNN did a piece on us, which you can see at our YouTube channel. And but now we have another network that has actually been bugging us. Actually, several producers have been asking us to do a TV program with other people. But you know, we have kept it kind of under wraps. We haven't even let everybody in our networks know. Everybody who's in the Living Network could know by now because all the ministers know. But a lot of people think that they're in the network because they're on email groups, and so they really don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, I was just talking to somebody the other day in a town near here and telling them that they needed to add certain things to their foundation to support their house for earthquakes. And they kind of look strange, like earthquakes. We never have earthquakes here. Well, the next day they had an earthquake. Or actually that night, that very night, they had an earthquake just south of them where he works. And so it wasn't a massive one, but I mean, it was actually, I remember telling somebody that who built in a foreign country, built a house in a foreign country, and he was showing me, I says, "This you need to put in this and this because the earthquakes." And he says, "We don't have earthquakes in that area." I said, "You will." Well, lo and behold, almost immediately there was a gigantic earthquake and buildings fell down all over that country because they don't build for earthquakes. They use concrete, but they don't build for earthquakes. And so the concrete structures just collapsed and thousands of people died. And he thought you didn't need it. And when I look at it, I said, "Oh my gosh, you need it. You need it." I could just see it happening. I've done this all my life. I didn't realize what was going on. I just thought I was a good guesser. You know, I actually be in somebody's house and I said, "You need to change that or this house is going to burn down." They don't change it. They say, "Oh no, it's okay." And it burns down. You know, because I actually see the destruction coming and I tell people. And, you know, I speak out. If I'm speaking out about destruction coming, there's a reason. I'm not just making this up. I didn't just see it on YouTube and say, you know, this might happen someday. I actually see it in the future. Sometimes the vision is so clear that I can actually read print on the pages of books open to me that will be open to me in the future. And I'm reading the book, you know, it was in the past by the time the book was opened in front of me, but I told somebody what was written in a book, and lo and behold, in the future, the book was opened up, and there it was, exactly what was in the book, exactly the way I described it. And, you know, we published a paper on this, and then lo and behold, the book gets opened up, and it says exactly what I said it would say. And of course I'm not going to prove that to you. I'm just telling you that that's the way it is. So if I say that something's going to happen, you should take that into consideration. You know, and when I was five years old, I was probably a little older than that. I was five when I originally met this individual, but, who provided me with a telescope to look at the sun. And I said there was going to be, I saw solar sunspots that particular year in this telescope on a special screen attached to the telescope. I mean, this is 50 years ago and plus, because I'm an old man now. And I said, this is important. And other things happened throughout my life, and I would see something. And it's what it's what I call a Kodak moment. It's like a photograph. I see events around me right there physically in that time, but sometimes I also see an image of things that are coming. Most of the time it's just an impression, you know, like you see somebody and you realize that they're a pain, that they have a pain here, and that they have a problem connected with this, and you point it out to them. And sometimes they're kind of like, how did you know? How did you know? Well, how would I not know? You know, I work for God. Of course I know. I see things coming. I see things happening. And I'm not alone in this. Now that that we've created this network, I'm dealing with other people who have similar abilities to see things, you know, that are troubling people, that are, you know, the baggage that we carry, the trauma that we carry, that is stifling our growth, our spiritual growth, and keeping us from maturing as spiritual creatures and physical creatures. Actually, the trauma can eventually hamper your body so much that you have physical deformity, physical restrictions and holding back for physical maturity and mental ability to comprehend things. You can't do it because of trauma. You can't see. It's like when you're born, when you're about 2 years old, you have more dendritic connections in your mind than at any other time in your entire life. When you're about 2 years old, that's about the maximum number of these connections in your brain, and you begin to perceive motion and learn how to walk and learn how to talk, and after a while these connections begin to fall away because you're not using them. So the more input and stimulus that you have at that age, the more interaction that's going to help form who you are later on. And that the number of those connections begin to decrease as you get older and older and older. Generally speaking, you know, there may be some exceptions to that because of other things that may happen in your life. But that those connections, that's all in the dendritic tree of your mind, the tree of knowledge that's in your brain. There are other connections, spiritual connections too. And what I wanted to equate this to is that your whole being, spiritual and physical, flesh and blood and spiritual, the flesh and blood includes your brain and all these actual connections in your brain. But the spiritual connection is not dependent upon the brain. The brain actually is very dependent upon the spiritual connection. Because in order to make connections, know what connections are important, know what connections are to be kept, you have a stage called sleeping, dreaming. When you sleep, you often relive all the events of the day. Even animals do this. They're played back in your mind. Actually, it's like rewinding the tape, kind of, you know, again, it's at fast speed, kind of, and you, unless you're very good at it, you can't even tell what's going on. But these things will stimulate what you'll see in your mind occasionally as you drift in this REM state back and forth, and you'll see dreams. And they're stimulated by this playback tape in your mind. And of course, certain traumas from 5 years ago or 10 years ago may play back more often. And they may feed into your conscious mind from your subconscious mind, and you have these dream states. Well, there's another source, and that's the spiritual reality of your being. It also is feeding into your brain. It's also controlling your brain. It's also like, see, if you have certain traumatic events, like somebody molests you, yeah, which I'm finding out is a lot more common event amongst people than you would want to know. But there's all kinds of ways to be molested. Obviously, we think of sexual molestation, but there's mental molestation, emotional molestation that takes place to children. Happens all the time. Happens every day in school. I can remember events in school where there was emotional molestation by teachers of children. I saw it in other children, and they also did it with me to some degree, although I was a little bit protected. I never went to public school. I always went to private schools. And not that it doesn't go on there, but it was a different set of things that were guiding and protecting me. But I saw it when people tried to do it to me, and it made scars. But then as I grew older, I could recall these things. I never had the kind of trauma I see in so many people today in the ministry that we're helping. But it doesn't matter the size of the trauma, but what is really going on when this trauma takes place? And so I'm going to equate it to kind of a physical drawing that you can make easily in your own mind. These dendritic connections, millions, billions of them. Well, let's not think of them as billions because you can't grasp that. Let's think of them as a mansion. And in that mansion, it's a giant mansion. It's got hundreds of rooms. And, you know, you got room for everything you know about volleyball, and a room for everything you know about history, and a room, maybe a couple rooms for history, you know. Several rooms for what you know about flowers and or whatever. Whatever it is. And each of those rooms has information about your life. And it's somewhat organized. You know, it's like a library. There's a section over here just full of information. All the books on extraterrestrials are over here in this room. And all the books on the Bible are over here in this room. And so you've got all this stuff going on in this mansion of a mind that you have. But a trauma takes place. And maybe some of the thoughts are, you know, that are down this hallway, you shut off that room because the trauma took place. And in, you know, when the trauma takes place, you have to put it somewhere. And you don't have a room just for trauma. So it ends up getting stuck in other rooms. They're all interconnected. They have side doors, you know. So you can go from this room to that room through a side door. You don't have to go out in the hallway. So anyway, you picture this kind of thing. This is the way your brain works. Everything is crisscross connected, back and forth and all over. You try to categorize it, but it's in there. And, you know, like you'll remember something about this, and then that will help you remember something about that, because those rooms are connected, interconnected. But trauma, something you don't want to see, something you don't want to look at, something that hurts, is painful, and it's a memory. You got to put it somewhere. So you put it in one of these rooms, and then you don't go in that room no more because it's too close to the trauma. It's got trauma in there, connected somehow. So all of a sudden you don't go in that room anymore. Everything you learned in the third grade, you don't even remember. You don't even remember your third grade teacher because you got molested during the time you were in the third grade. You got some sort of trauma. It doesn't have to be your teacher, but it just, that whole section can get blocked out. It creates a shadow in your brain where you don't go. A room, a dark room full of cobwebs and memories. And you don't remember them. You know, people often talk about this when I'm opening them up and exploring their own heart spiritually, is they suddenly say, well, you know, I didn't remember anything about that. I forgot completely about that. Why? Because there was a trauma associated with it. And even, you know, like you could take a bus ride, and while you're on the bus ride, you see something that reminds you of a trauma, and then the whole bus ride disappears from your memory. Maybe not right away, but soon afterwards, you can't even remember. I don't even remember going to Grandma's house that year. Because something while you went to Grandma's house reminded you of a trauma. Or maybe a trauma took place there. And so you end up with huge numbers of rooms in your mind that you don't go in. Huge dark areas. Some of the rooms are big. And in those dark areas, evil can begin to develop influence. You have your subconscious that's constantly feeding your conscious mind with information. And normally this is all filtered through your spirit. But if other spirits get in there, they filter it. They filter information. They will tell you things. They will direct your thinking because they have influence. This is familiar spirits that are following you around. And if you get caught up in certain activities in the spiritual realm, you literally will give off a smell. It's like a smell. in that spiritual realm that will draw spirits to you that feed off of that trauma that you have, that whatever kind of trauma you have, if it's sexual or maybe you're a very angry person, you know, you get violent and you beat people. I know people, even in our network, I know people everywhere, that all over the place, all over the country, wherever I go, I run into this, that somebody was traumatized, brutalized, emotionally, whatever, by circumstances that they're growing up. Maybe their mothers had men after men after men into the home because they were always, you know, maybe their mother was a biker chick or something. Anyway, and these men came in and they maybe yelled at you, brutalized you, neglected you, molested you, whatever. Just their presence can be a trauma to you because they're bringing in all this anger and evil with them. And then they're having relationships with your mother. This is a trauma, even if you never get molested. This is a trauma in your life. And then you grow up, and then you get married, and you leave your wife. And you get married to another woman, and you leave her, and you leave your children. And then you get married to another woman, and you leave her and her children. You see a pattern developing there? You're following in the footsteps of the very people that traumatized you when you were little because you are not you. You is way back there when you were 5 years old. You're not you. You've become the molesters of your life. You've become the traumas of your life. Because all those traumas are still hidden in your mind, in your being. So what do you do about that? How do you get rid of that? You're going to have to go into those rooms. And it's really a good idea to go in with a light. Because those rooms are dark. And there's things lurking in there that go bump in the night. And some of it's just, you know, memories. But there could be evil lurking in there. In those rooms. Now, remember, we're talking about a metaphor, an analogy of this mansion that is your mind. And so it's good to go into those dark places with somebody else. Somebody else who doesn't want to traumatize you. Somebody who wants to love. Somebody who wants to give. Now, where are you going to find those people? Now, there's all kinds of people who say they love. And we talked about that in the show before this, that they say they love, but they love like my cat loves birds. They want to... They actually, you know, like vampires love. They want to drink your blood. They want your life. They want something from you. The wanting love. You know, passionate love is wanting love. You want them to love you because you're hollow. You don't have love in you. People who need love, who need people, don't have love. They're not full. They need somebody else to fill them up. And they will take a bite out of you emotionally. They'll be demanding on you emotionally. Nymphomaniacs, demanding. Because they're empty. And people take advantage of that. So, you want to be filled with light and love. Interesting, somebody, I won't say who it was, somebody who I've known all their life, was having trouble with somebody who said that they couldn't make enough money, that they were going to have to take another job. And they said, you don't need another job. You make enough money. You have drinking habits. You and your significant other have drinking habits and gambling habits, gambling problems. And you don't know how to manage your money. And so they said, well, what am I supposed to do? So they were going to tell him. Now, what were they going to tell? Listen to money management tapes and get a book on money management and how to save and all this stuff? No. They told him to go down to the homeless shelter. Go to your house, find all kinds of stuff that you don't need anymore. Take it down to the homeless shelter. And I want you to give it to them. And I want you to spend time with the people at the homeless shelter. What? What does that have to do with a gambling problem and a drinking problem? Well, it has everything to do with it. I mean, you're gambling because you're missing something. You're drinking because you feel like you need something. You know what they did after they did that? They went to one of their children's homes and they helped them clean up their home. They just started serving other people. And, you know, I mean, if you actually, you don't want to get off depression medication, stop thinking about you. Start thinking about other people. Anyway, the point is that this helps you arm yourself to go into those dark rooms. And there's a lot more dark rooms than the gambling problem and the drinking problem. Those are all things to keep the darkness in. So what other things do we do to cover up so that we don't have to go into those dark places and bring light where there was darkness? Everybody wants to, you know, evangelize the sinners of the world. We're, you know, going to go over and evangelize people in Africa or somewhere and bring them the Bible. You want to evangelize? You want to bring light where there's darkness? Take a look at your own souls. And of course, there's nothing wrong with you, right? I mean, you've got everything straightened out. You don't have any dark spots. You never had any traumas. The reality is a lot of the people who never led these terrible traumatic lives of child molestation or brutalization or whatever it is, they grew up in a regular home, you know, and all this kind of stuff. They have more trauma than they want to admit. And it doesn't matter how big or the trauma is or how small, trauma is trauma. Sin is sin. That's another thing I see people, you know, they know somebody is sinning, you know, violating the Ten Commandments, maybe committing fornication or maybe they're a kleptomaniac. We had a kleptomaniac in the seminary. We all knew it. We all knew he was stealing. Because we all had experience. Something was stolen. I had a prayer book stolen from me. Another guy had a watch stolen from him. Another guy had a baseball mitt stolen from him. This guy was stealing stuff he never used. He couldn't use them because everybody knew. We had a very small school. And he was stealing the stuff. And everybody figured out who it was, and we just wondered about it. Finally, at the end of the school year, and we couldn't speak above the first floor where we slept in the dormitories. And we'd have 20 guys in a dormitory. And so, the beds were just lined up in a row. And all of a sudden he came up one day when we were all upstairs, and he was walking around to each person, and he dropped what he had stolen on their bed, whether they were there or not. And he was returning everything. You know, he was dealing with that problem. And everybody knew it. It was no secret. But he couldn't help himself. He had to take stuff. Now, I could tell you more about his early life, and you would realize, oh my gosh, well, no wonder he had trauma. I mean, he was raised in a mortuary. So, you know, I mean, there were dead people downstairs all the time as a growing up as a child. And because they actually lived in the mortuary where his father did embalming. So, you know, there was probably trauma there. It wasn't necessarily that somebody molested him or anything, but there was trauma. There were things that he hid in his mind, and this allowed him to be used and by evil. Evil could pull the strings of his thinking and justify. Well, there's probably nothing more traumatic than religion. Most religions are guilt-driven. Catholicism, Judaism, guilt-driven religions, and imposed guilt, social guilt, placed upon you, is trauma. You feel bad because you didn't do things like everybody else. They tell you you're a sinner, that you're evil, that you're wicked, and all these things. And it's also the spirit by which they tell you. Because that, you know, just like, you know, obviously if somebody brutalizes, somebody hits them and leaves a bruised mark, you can say, oh, well, that's trauma. We actually call it trauma in the medical world. But what about when somebody bruises somebody emotionally? You know, children are fragile emotionally. And somebody yells at them and screams at them, hollers at them. Somebody mocks them, humiliates them, tells them that they're stupid, betrays their love. They, you know, children naturally want to love their parents. And sometimes that betrayal may not be overt. You know, literally, I can tell you situations, I know personally situations, where parents died. They just died when the child was like 2 years old or 3 years old, or disappeared out of the child's life when they're 2 and 3 years old. That's trauma. It was, you know, they died. They didn't mean anything. They weren't trying to hurt their child. But they disappeared. Somebody that child, that all the child knows is they were there and they're gone. I was using them as a life vest and something ripped it out of my hands. And this creates resentment. Now, it's not that they resent their parents. They don't think I resent my parents for dying. But it traumatizes them. It injures them. Now, they may adjust. They may begin to face that and understand that trauma. But then again, they may not. They may just close the door on that and hide their feelings about that. And 50 years later, they're sick and they don't know why. And you talk about it, and if you're with a minister that has been developing the ways of Christ and living according to the ways of Christ, not like the ministers you see in most of your churches, they're actually the ways of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They're ear ticklers. They themselves don't want to go into a lot of rooms. They don't want to see the truth. They can't handle it. If they saw the truth, they'd realize that my entire seminary and professional career as a minister is a fraud. It's all dung. They don't want to see that. You have to hit them with a lightning bolt on the way to Damascus before they'll see that everything they were taught is dung. They just don't want to see it. And there's a lot of lightning bolts coming. So a lot of ministers may have a chance to wake up. But if you find actual ministers who are walking in the ways of Christ, and they can just sit with you and talk with you and share with you and pray with you. Because, you know, when we sit and we talk with people that we're counseling spiritually, we're in a constant state of prayer. We're in prayer afterwards. We're in prayer before. It's unceasing prayer. We're not mumbling a lot of words, but we have this position of prayer. And we're trying to awaken those people by bringing light where there is darkness in their own minds. Now, they don't have to remember everything in detail. They just have to bring light in those rooms so that they can go back in those rooms. Later on, little thoughts will, when they're being still, you know, the books on the shelves in those rooms will kind of open up and they'll see certain things, if need be. And they will awaken more and more and more to what they have forgotten. Because many people have forgotten a great deal about their own lives because of that trauma. And hopefully they will continue diligently to seek that truth. And so we're going to talk about one of the great traumas of all times when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom. But we're going to have a little brief break first. So we'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. One of the things that we have a number of ministers who always are trying to create some sort of kind of metaphoric puppet show to try to explain the kingdom. And one of the things that is equated with the kingdom is this idea of Christians being like plutonium. Plutonium actually, you know, radioactive material is actually just giving off light particles for the most part. And they're actually giving off little tiny bits of light. And of course there's different frequencies, and more unstable isotopes can give off actually different kinds of, you know, beta and gamma rays. But basically we're talking about light spectrum. And if you get enough of that material together, I mean, like they'll have a half a softball of that material. And then they have the other half of the softball over here. And they place it in a machine and they bring it closer and closer together. And when they get to a certain distance apart, they get what they call critical mass. And suddenly, light is given off in every direction. Lots of it. Huge amounts of it. Because there's a interaction of the material, where they all begin to glow. They all begin to give off more energy. And there's an abundance of energy to even hold an atom into its existence. And that is a critical kind of natural metaphor that we can relate to what Christianity is really all about. I mean, real Christianity, not what's posing as Christianity. And I see it already that ministers are beginning to wake up spiritually more so than ever. And we're just a small group. I'm sure that there are many, many other groups out there that are starting to do this. There are also many groups that think they're getting closer to God and they're actually getting closer to hell. Because that's actually where we're at. We're actually between these two realms of hell and heaven. That's where our physical existence is. And something draws you near to heaven, and something else draws you near to hell. And we've gone over this before. The Hebrew word for sacrifice is from the word that means to draw near. And sacrifice has to do with service, has to do with free will offerings, has to do with charity, which is a major theme throughout the Bible, both Old and New Testament. It has to do with love. I mean, even the word that we see translated charity many times in the epistles is the same word that is translated into love when Jesus says it. And even the word grace is actually from the word charis, which is where we get charity, because grace is a form of charity. So anyway, understanding that sacrifice draws you near to the kingdom of heaven. That love draws you near to the kingdom of heaven. What draws you farther away from it? Selfishness. And what contributes to selfishness more than judgment and anger? Resentment. You know, we're supposed to love our enemy. We're supposed to be shining the light that God gives us in the direction even of our enemies. And actually, that is part of the full armor of God. That light, that's the kind of armor. Our armor is an armor of light. It's an armor of love, shining out in all directions, not just to those that love us, but to those that hate us. That's a little tricky. You can't do that until you start dealing with the trauma, those closed doors in your mansion, in those rooms within the mansion of your own mind. You have to look at them. I mean, you can be a real nice guy here in this area and real nice guy there, and you have a lot of information that you share, but what about the rooms you don't go into? You see, because they create a shadow coming out from your being. It's like a sunspot. You know, you see the sun, it's all bright and everything. You see it, you know, projected on a screen, it's all bright. Then you see these sunspots, little black spots. Most amazing thing. I mean, people don't even know what the sun is. I mean, the whole dynamics of the sun for physicists has completely been overthrown time and time again. You know, the sun is actually a portal. That's actually what it is. It's other things too, but it's actually a portal in time and space. That's what's going on there. That's one of the things going on. There's actually, it's a portal to more than one place. But, you know, you don't need to know that. But the point is there's a whole lot going on there. But it talks about it in days that to come that the sun will appear as sackcloth. Well, you know what sackcloth? If you were to hold up sackcloth to a bright light, you would see all kinds of dark. I mean, the cloth, you wouldn't even see the cloth. They would just appear as dark shadows. And light would peer through it. You see, those dark spots in your heart that you don't want to go, it makes you vulnerable. It's kind of like your Achilles heel. Now, if you had to face a mob of people that were angry and wanted to kill you, and you had to walk right up to them, you need the armor of God, the full armor of God. Because, you know, this guy may not be able to kill you, and this guy may not be able to kill you, but this guy may have familiar spirits that he can see your weak spot. And he can kill you in your weak spot. Now, in Achilles, it was, you know, his heel was supposedly his weak spot, and an arrow pierced there with poison, and then it got into him and killed him. But that's, again, we're just using that story as a metaphor, that you have weak spots. Maybe it's anger. Maybe it's lust. Maybe it's judgment. Maybe it's fear. Fear and anger are very closely related. How do you get rid of those things? You have to go into the dark places of your own mind where the trauma took place. And I mentioned just before the break that we're going to talk about one of the biggest traumas, and that is religion. Religions are traumatic. Especially as a youth. Now, that was one of the startling revelations when I discovered that when I saw God and talked to God and communicated with God and thought about God, I wasn't doing the same thing as my teachers. They were doing something else. I thought they were talking to the same God as me. They weren't, because they weren't coming to the same conclusions. I remember I was a big question asker in private school and in seminary. I would say, but what about this? And man, sometimes you would see people just absolutely get, I'm just asking a question. I'm a little kid asking a question. And they would get just ticked. They would just go, but you talk about trauma. They were traumatized by my questions. Now, it wasn't my intent. My intent was, I was seeing something was wrong here. I tell you, if you want to take this journey into your mind, you need other people. You don't need other people to tell you what's going on in your mind. But you need that interaction with other people to bring attention to you, what you're missing. And you might get that in church. You might get that in a lot of places. But there's going to be some conflict. You know, I just said this to somebody else, that if a man thinks he is wise, let him marry. Because the very structure of marriage is to bring your attention to the weakness of you as a man, and vice versa. That, you know, I mean, there's a line in Shakespeare where she's talking about to test what metal a man is made of, if he's made of, you know, what's he made out of? I can't remember the line right offhand, but anyway, the point is that's what marriage is really about. to test what metal we are made out of. Test the heart of the individual. You know, to test our souls, our very souls. And having children is the same thing. It adds to that test. If a man thinks he is patient, let him have children. Because they will find your weak spot, and better them than the enemy. And they will bring it to your face. How will you handle that? So, you know, marriage is a learning environment. It's God created it for the very purposes of getting us to test who we are. And, of course, divorce is tearing up the test and throwing it out the window and saying, I'm not taking this test anymore. I'm going to go and find somebody who doesn't ask the hard questions, which prolongs the trauma. And so, you know, I know we can't reduce all life down to that, and there are many people that have had divorces and everything else, but really, you know, there is a challenge in this life that we have to face. Religion, as we're taught today, is a trauma. Now, let me define that, because I keep going back to that, and I know a lot of people are disagreeing with it. I've said it several times now. They're still wanting to disagree with it. What do I mean by religion? Our regular listeners know that religion 200 years ago was defined as how you performed your duty to God and your fellow man. And what's your duty to God? Seek righteousness for yourself and for others, for your neighbor, to love your neighbor as yourself, to be fruitful, multiply, dress it and keep it. And of course, you have a duty not to murder your neighbor, not to steal from your neighbor, not to take a bite out of your neighbor, not to oppress your neighbor. Those are more negative duties. You're just not supposed to do those. But your duty to them is to love them, help them when they need real help, strengthen them when they need to be strengthened. And so that your duty to God and your fellow man are overlapping. They're the same, which is... Those two ideas are both found in the two commandments on which all commandments are hinged. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Same thing. He keeps coming back to those two basic things. What do we do now for our neighbor? Mostly what we do is we send men to their door who exercise authority to take away from our neighbor so that we can be comfortable or secure or have free things. What we call free for us, but somebody had to pay for it. That's selfish. The very nature of the system today is a tool of selfishness. It's a trauma of selfishness. And it's drawing us towards the dark side, towards the evil, towards where there is no light or less light. So how do we get drawn back the other way? Take you back to that story where the lady who had the gambling and drinking problem thought they didn't have enough money and they needed another job to get more money. Why? So you can gamble more away and drink more away? No, you needed to learn to manage your money. So do you go to a money management course? No. You start caring about other people. Because the reason you have this addiction, these addictions... It's because you care about yourself. What are some of the other addictions? Depression medication. Built-in addictions. You know, we really should do another program on addictions. I've seen just tremendously interesting statistics. I may have mentioned it on this show already. You know, they talk about giving, you know, heroin and morphine to rats in water. And they would have two sources of water in a cage where a rat is isolated. And the rat would go continuously, whatever rat they put in there, would continuously go to the water that had the heroin and morphine in it. And they would eventually overdose and kill themselves. And it was always the case. So they said, well, see, it's clear addiction. But somebody else came along, and nobody ever tells you about this study. Then they actually created Rat Haven. Rat heaven, maybe. And it had plenty of food, plenty of social interaction with other rats, which are a very social animal. They had you know, tunnels to go in and out so they could get privacy and they could dig and forage for food that was in abundance so they weren't starving, but they had this social interaction. They put the same two eyedroppers in there. Not one of the rats became addicted and died. Not one. Why? Because they had everything they needed to be content. They were not isolated, traumatized by that isolation. Today, we traumatize one another by isolation. Now, there's a double card here. And you have to play both to get this. Does that mean that we all need to go out and create big social clubs where we're all socializing and interacting so that we don't have drug addiction? Well, of course, you know, AA partially provides that with their, you know, 12-step plan. They create a social environment and a support system so that you have this emotional support so that you can break that addiction. People are a little bit more complex than rats. They're a little bit higher up the mental chain. Not a lot higher up, but they're a little bit higher up. And we're complex emotional creatures, and we're definitely spiritual creatures in a way that rats are not. Not to say that there isn't a spirit in rats, there actually is, but it's not like man's spirit. Man's spirit is unique. That's why man is so unique. So, what exactly do we need? What is the rat getting from his social environment that keeps him from drug addiction? And what should we be getting, not duplicating rat haven for everybody, but what should we have that would keep us from addiction? And I've given stories where somebody was addicted to nicotine, which was terrible and everything, had an emotional release. He saw something. He went into one of those dark rooms. He chose to go in. Somebody said something that reminded him and he made the connections, but he wanted to go in and he made the connections. He wept driving down the freeway in LA. He wept in the car. And he couldn't even remember exactly what it was that he was seeing, but he was seeing something. He didn't know how it was related to his past, but he was going into one of those dark rooms. And he simply stopped smoking. It had nothing to do with smoking. He wasn't even thinking about cigarettes, wasn't thinking about stopping smoking, wasn't even trying to stop smoking, but he just stopped smoking. There were cigarettes in his bathroom, cigarettes in his truck, cigarettes in his car, in the glove compartment, cigarettes in the drawer by his bed, cigarettes in the kitchen. He had cigarettes everywhere, and he just didn't pick any of them up. Weeks went by until he suddenly realized, I'm not smoking. And this guy was a chain smoker. It gave him up. It let go. Now, it's not always that traumatic, and it's always not always that dramatic. But then again, we're not all struck by lightning on the road to Damascus. But he went into one of those dark rooms. What helps you get into one of those dark rooms of your mind is to help somebody else who's lost in the dark room of his own mind. Help somebody else see the light of kindness. Now, you can overdo that. Don't just start throwing $100 bills at every bum on the street corner. That's irresponsible. But you start helping other people. Now, you don't even know how to do that, really help other people. But, you know, that person who went down to the homeless shelter, they actually did it. They went down to the homeless shelter with extra food and stuff, and they actually spent some time there, and it started becoming life-changing. Now, I don't know how, I mean, this person's got a lot of other baggage too, but it's a start. And this is why you need to congregate together with other people who at least are saying that they want to have that spiritual armor. They want to go into those dark places. They want to see the truth about themselves. They want to be set free from their addictions, whether the addiction is drugs or cigarettes or sex or pornography or whatever it is. They want to be set free from that. And they want to put on the full armor of God. They want to become a light to other people, not in vanity, but in humility and in service, like Christ. They want to come in the name of Christ to serve. So you need to find other people with that same, you know, it's like AA. I actually have done some work on it, but I need to do more work on our 12-step plan to overcome the addiction to false religion. Because, see, religion today used to be fulfillment of your duty to your pious duty to God and your fellow man. Now religion is what you think about God. You join this church because they think this about God, and you join that church because they think that about God. And the first thing people ask when they come to his, not everybody, but a lot of people come to his holy church and want to form a congregation or get with a congregation, is, so what do you believe about this? And what do you believe about that? And what do you believe about that? And they have this little checklist, theological checklist. And they want to know what we think about all these things. And I'm working on an article on that. We've talked a little bit about that before. Now, I noticed that we just actually got a donation in from somebody named Diane. And I'm just going to say right here on the air, if she was listening to this program, thank you, Diane. I never do that. I'm actually just fiddling with my hand here, clicking on things and cleaning up emails as I'm talking because I'm a multitasker. And I happen to notice that. And it's kind of unusual. So if she is listening, thank you. And we're actually going to need some help, because if we do this deal with the networks, we're going to, this particular TV network, it's gonna cost us more than we're gonna get. And it just because of the effort, and we're gonna be doing double time because we still have to keep all of our responsibilities to all the congregations that we serve, and we're gonna have to have our time taken up with these other people. But it may shove us a little bit into the limelight if we do, and we haven't agreed to anything yet, and we'll have more people coming into the network with more baggage, more trauma, and we're going to need more ministers who understand that trauma and are willing to, you know, set down their own baggage so that they'll be ready to help other people set down their baggage. We don't need more religious baggage. We need more light. We don't need more rationalizing. This seeking the kingdom of heaven is so diametrically opposed. It's not really opposed, but it's so much the other direction from what we see in modern religion today. And I don't care whether it's Christian or Buddhist or whatever. I mean, you'll find elements in all of these, but it is so life-changing. But see, right now, you're like, the light that's in you is like in sackcloth. You've got it all covered up with this baggage, and the light's not coming through. And in some cases, it's almost going out, but it's there. And we have to peel away those layers. And the way you do it is not psychoanalyzation. It's actually going out and doing what Christ said. Loving one another. Caring, sacrificing for one another. I mean, charity is sacrifice. Like I said, in the Old Testament, you don't find the word charity anywhere. New Testament, you find it everywhere. Old Testament, you do find sacrifice in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, you find sacrifice everywhere. You also find free will offerings, etc. But Moses and Jesus were in agreement. They were both preaching the same thing. It's just somebody changed the terminology. Charity is sacrifice. Sacrifice has not been done away with. If you don't come to serve, which is sacrifice, you don't come in the name of Christ, and you don't receive the blood of Jesus Christ, and you will not be cleansed by the blood of Jesus Christ, no matter how much emotional trauma you want to bring to the altar of your own imagination, you're not saved. You're just under a strong delusion. If you don't see the tracks of Christ behind you, you're not walking with him. You need to be coming together like the first century church that were laying down their lives daily, helping one another daily, not eating of the bread of Caesar. They wouldn't take the free bread of Caesar. They wouldn't sign up for it. They were actually burned alive because they refused to sign up for the free bread of Caesar, which was the religion of Caesar. It was all run through the temple of Caesar. They wouldn't do that. You've all done that. In ignorance, you've been under this strong delusion. You've been made merchandise by the vows of your fathers who sold you into slavery. And that's just where it is. I'm not picking on you for it. I'm saying your salvation is to bring in that light. It's not to change your religion, go to a different church or anything like that. We never tell our congregations to stop going to the church they're going to. Just like I said last week, a Quaker coming on the property and was asking, where's your church building? I said, the church is not a building. It's people. And that's what it is. And it's not in one place. It's wherever two or more are gathered in his name. To gather in his name means to gather to serve, to lay down your life for others. Stop playing church. Start being the church. Stop thinking you go to church and go with Christ. This is the way. This is his way. And it will lighten up your mansion and clean out the demons and set you free. And until then, may peace be upon your house. And may God be with you. God bless. See you on the network.